The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Larkin, Judge Johnson, Judge Schmidt, the Honorable Michelle A. Larkin presiding.
Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It's 12th day of February, 2025. We have three cases on the court's calendar this morning. We are ready for oral arguments in the first case, which is State versus McCarter. Each attorney should be sure to state their name for the record, so we have a recording, or we have you identified on our audio recording. If need be, you can raise or lower the podium to suit your needs. And with that, we'll hear from counsel for appellant.
Good morning. Good morning, counsel. May it please the court. My name is John Archigo. I am here on behalf of appellant Janelle McCarter, and I'm here this morning asking this court to review the sufficiency of the evidence that was introduced at Mr. McCarter's trial that supported the trial court's findings and verdicts, and also to ask this court to review trial counsel's performance and determine whether Mr. McCarter did in fact receive sufficient representation as the trial court and post-conviction court has determined. I'd like to start by addressing the evidence that was introduced at Mr. McCarter's trial. Mr. McCarter was convicted of three separate counts of criminal sexual conduct, count one being in the first degree, which required sufficient evidence to support findings of sexual penetration that caused the complainant to suffer physical harm or injury. The evidence introduced at trial was insufficient to support the trial court's findings of actual penetration in this case. The victim testified at trial that repeatedly testified that she felt Mr. McCarter's fingers trying to accomplish what she felt was penetration, trying to accomplish what she thought he was trying to do. And this is throughout the trial transcript. It starts at page 40 of the trial transcript, and then really the essence of the testimony on this issue is contained on pages 46 to 50 of the trial transcript, where the trial prosecutor repeatedly asked her to describe what she recalled happening and occurring, and did in fact ask her if she felt Mr. McCarter's fingers actually penetrate her vagina. And repeatedly she testified that she felt fingers trying to.
Didn't she also testify she felt part of his finger enter her vaginal opening?
Those words, Your Honor, are taken from the trial court's findings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that that was a fair representation of the victim's trial testimony. On page 40 of the trial transcript, she testified that she felt two fingers trying to, quote, like, touch my area. On page 46, she testified that she felt fingers, quote, touching my vagina area. Again, touching her area, and again, wasn't very specific on what that meant. Again, on page 46 and into page 47, she had testified that she felt, quote, his fingers trying to come inside my vagina area, and, quote, I felt like a centimeter of his fingers try to come, what was implied to be inside her vagina. So again, we have repeated testimony where she described that she described what she thought she felt was Mr. McCarter trying to.
Under the case law, I believe, it's not necessary for the state to prove that there was entry into the vaginal canal. Rather, I think the case law says any intrusion into the vaginal folds, however slight, constitutes penetration. Is that an accurate statement of the law?
It is, Judge. Any penetration, however slight, into the opening.
Well, I don't know if it's into the opening. I think the case law says into the vaginal folds, doesn't it? And I think this court has rejected arguments that we should take sort of a biological approach and look only at penetration to mean into the vaginal canal itself, past the opening.
Yes, Your Honor. You're correct.
Okay. Well, if that is the law, and the victim said, as you've described it, and we view the evidence in the light most favorable, isn't that sufficient to show penetration within the meaning of the law?
It's not, Your Honor. My interpretation of the testimony is, again, a repeated description of an attempt.
But that's your interpretation of the evidence. We need to view the evidence in the light most favorable to the verdict. So if the fact finder had a different interpretation of her testimony, and it's a reasonable interpretation of her testimony, aren't we bound by that interpretation?
We're bound by the district court's, the trial court's interpretation. The issue is whether it was a reasonable interpretation based on the testimony at trial. And the testimony, Your Honor, in the transcripts repeatedly indicates that she stated that she felt Mr. McCarter was trying to penetrate. She was asked, and this is on page 47 of the trial transcript, if a hand ever went inside. She testified, "I felt like a centimeter of his fingers try to." So there's unclear sufficient testimony, Judge, of the victim being able to describe penetration, however slight. There isn't that sufficient evidence to support the trial court's interpretation. Even when viewed in light most favorable to the verdict, it's not a reasonable interpretation of the evidence.
Okay. As you've set forth your argument, am I to understand that you're not challenging sufficiency of the evidence as to the attempted first-degree count?
With regard to that count, Judge, there still needs to be a sufficient finding of injury that occurred with it as well.
Okay. But as to the penetration aspect, you're saying the evidence shows that he tried to penetrate her.
There is repeated testimony from her that she felt that he did try to. But again, Judge, again, now focusing on the additional elements that are required with a sufficient finding of injury, reasonable interpretation of the testimony to support the physical injury element. Again, the testimony that was introduced on this, again, is vague and uncertain, especially when we're obviously giving deference to the presumption of innocence and the required burdens of proof. She was asked if what she felt were Mr. McCarter's actions, if they hurt. And this is on page 48 of the trial transcript, where she was asked to describe this, and she said, "I couldn't really feel it." Again, she explains why she maybe couldn't at the time, but that was her testimony, that she couldn't really feel it. There is testimony, I'll acknowledge, in the transcript that she felt that there was a scratch, but the elements require physical injury, pain, or bodily harm. And when you look at those elements in the context of the testimony, and you have her explaining that she couldn't really feel what she thought was a scratch, and then when she was later asked to describe how she knew if there was a scratch or some injury, the testimony there again is she just didn't know. She wasn't certain. She wasn't able to really describe it. Her comments were that she noticed some redness and saw a, quote, scratch mark somewhere on me and didn't know where blood was coming from. So again, we have testimony where she's trying to describe what she thought had occurred, but viewing the testimony and the evidence, again, keeping in mind the presumption of innocence and the burden of proof that's required, we have vague and uncertain testimony on this element. And I think this is acknowledged in the respondent's brief as well, page 18 of the brief, where respondent does acknowledge that in this case, the details establishing appellant's physical injury of the victim were relatively limited.
Why is the red in her underwear, which the court said is consistent with blood, why is that not enough?
Because the requirement is that physical injury has to be sufficient evidence of physical injury, which is defined as pain or bodily harm.
Well, the court said she felt the pain and the injury, and then from that is the red in her underwear consistent with blood. So that's where the injury would be.
Yeah, so that's, again, that's the court's findings, right, which I don't know that are necessarily reasonable based on the evidence that was introduced at trial. That's the issue. That's the testimony that was introduced, I don't think supports the trial court's findings. The trial court was, I think, drew its own conclusions that weren't supported by the evidence that was issued at trial.
We apply the same standard of review whether it's a jury trial or a court trial. But one thing that's odd in this situation is we have the benefit of findings from the finder of fact, in this case, the judge. And we normally review fact findings for clear error. But if we didn't have those fact findings and we were just looking at the evidence, we would simply be asking, viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the verdict, was it sufficient? Is there any tension between those two standards? I mean, do we give less deference when we have findings and apply sort of a what seems like it might be a higher clear error standard?
Judge, I think you have obviously the two competing standards here, Your Honor, and the central point is that the testimony that was introduced at trial on these issues of penetration and physical injury don't support the trial court's ultimate findings. So we have insufficient evidence to support the verdicts, to support the guilty verdict that was, especially on count one, with respect to penetration.
Okay, and no challenge to count three, second degree.
Well, again, Judge, the challenge there is the requirement of physical pain or
physical pain or injury.
Right.
What is the presumptive sentence difference between the attempt charge and the second degree? If you don't know, that's fine, because that's neither here nor there. I'm just curious.
Yeah, Judge, and I did try to determine this yesterday. So going back to the time of this case and this matter, I did review the pre-sentence investigation report that was issued, which calculated Mr. McCarter's criminal history. I believe count three at the time would have been a 195-month guideline sentence. Count two, Your Honor, if I calculated this correctly with the attempt element here, the guideline sentence, I believe, should have been about 117 months.
So the attempted first is less than the second.
Right.
Could you address for a moment the ineffective assistance of counsel argument, specifically the second prong? I see in your briefing that you state several times, well, if this or that had been done differently, the outcome would have been different, but you don't really explain why. Could you just explain to us succinctly why you think any of these alleged errors, had they not occurred, or if counsel had handled it differently, the outcome would have been different, and why that is so?
Yeah, Judge, and I think it's more of really the sort of the totality of the deficiencies that have been outlined in the brief. The cumulative effect really rendered Mr. McCarter deprived him of a fair trial. And you know, when you look at the totality of the issues when it comes to Mr. McCarter's claims and allegations about the deficiencies in a fair opportunity to know and understand his case, to review all the discovery materials, to really have thorough discussions about his right to testify, really in the context of not understanding his case, trying to decide between a court or a jury trial, how that might be different if he testifies, really not knowing understanding how a criminal history may impact his testimony, especially, again, in the context of whether he's having a court trial or a jury trial. And these decisions now that are being essentially put on him, where he waived his right to a jury trial, waived his right to testify, those aren't, they weren't knowing or valid or intelligent waivers.
You say that in the context of your argument that counsel was objectively unreasonable, but you don't separately challenge the validity of his waivers and do an analysis under the law that would determine the validity. Am I reading your briefing correctly, as well as your arguments in post-conviction court?
You are, Your Honor.
Okay.
You are. Judge, I think one of the strongest issues, too, is trial counsel's lack of investigation in this matter, where there were two known potential witnesses that were at the residence at the time. Their names and contact information were in the police reports. There were no efforts to locate these individuals.
One of those was TJ.
Well, yeah, TJ was with appellant and...
Right. Is that one of the two known witnesses?
There aren't. There are two other individuals that lived at this home where Mr. McCarter was residing at the
time.
And
is there any indication that they were in the portion of this home where it happened or observed it or observed the complaining witness?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. They certainly weren't in the bedroom at the time, Judge, but there was statements and testimony and evidence offered that there were allegations that the victim was screaming. These individuals were in the home. These issues could have been explored or talked to them to see if that could have been confirmed. They presumably would have an opportunity to observe her.
All right. You are past your time, which is, happens. You'll have additional time on rebuttal, 5 minutes.
We'll now
hear from the attorney for the state.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Assistant Ramsey County Attorney Alexandra Meyer, appearing on behalf of the state. I did have 3 points I briefly wanted to emphasize, but I would turn the court first to the evidence that I feel supports the judge's finding that and that this court can rely on in finding that the evidence was sufficient. That would be page 47 of the transcript, where specifically the prosecutor asked, did the hand ever touch your vagina? Answer, yes. Okay, did the hand ever go inside of your vagina? I felt like a centimeter of his fingers try to come. Question, a centimeter of his fingers? And here the victim answers, yep, like the first finger part, and that's when I felt a scratch because he had sharp nails.
Prosecutor asked, could you go back to the beginning and do that again?
Just that portion?
No, where you started, please.
Did the hand ever touch your vagina? Answer, yes. Okay, did the hand ever go inside of your vagina? Answer, I felt like a centimeter of his fingers try to come. Question, a centimeter?
Felt like a centimeter tried to come.
Try to come.
So she didn't say, I felt like a centimeter went inside. It's again, tried to come, implying inside.
So I would point the court to, throughout her testimony, she uses some phrases or the way she speaks. She repeatedly says, fitting to scream is how the transcript reports it, F-I-T-T-I-N-G.
Okay. Did she ever say the tip of his fingers went inside?
She says the tip of his fingers scratched her vagina on the lips. That, to me, is sufficient under the case law. I think you were referring to was an opinion you authored last year called Carranza, which I didn't find until this morning, so I didn't include it in my brief, but Your Honor's obviously familiar with it. And in that case, the court relied on State v. Shamp from 1988, talking about entering the folds or the lips area of the vagina is sufficient for penetration.
Your argument is we don't need to show finger went inside. We have her testimony that she felt it scratch her lips, and that gets us where we need to be under Shamp.
Yes. Additionally, because of the way she describes it, scratching her lips, is that the first finger part that was trying to enter scratched her lips. When you put that together, especially with her patterns of speech, the district court definitely had a basis to understand this is how she talks in the first-person perfect. I'm not going to get the grammar here, but she's talking in a way that she's not just saying, this happened. She's saying, this was trying to happen. This was fixing to happen. Counsel is saying she said she screamed. She didn't. She said, I was fixing to scream. I was fixing to get loud. So it's a speech pattern that the judge observed and saw how she talked. And that's something we rely on district courts to do, is to understand the way a victim or any witness is presenting themselves. I would also point you to page 18 of the MCRC transcript, which includes this statement. The victim said, yeah, I felt something like in the inside, but I just don't remember like what part. And then the nurse said, okay, tell me about that. Tell me what it felt like. And the victim answers, it felt like it was just like a scratch, like he tried to like, and I remember when I got back home or whatever, I went to use the bathroom, and I just like, I was kind of bleeding a little bit. Okay. So you add that to her testimony, and there is the victim saying he used his hand on an area of my body that was inside the vaginal area, not inside the vaginal canal, but that's not required by case law, inside the vaginal area, which includes the lips, et cetera, and that caused a scratch, which made me bleed a little bit.
Okay, and that's in the transcript from the MCRC interview, and the transcript was received as evidence.
Correct. I didn't bother to write down the time on the MCRC video, right, but the transcript was admitted as a court exhibit. And that was page 18.
What you describe as the district court's understanding of her speech patterns or way of speaking, did the district court express that in the order at all?
It did not, but when Judge Larkin was asking Mr. Archigo about how to interpret or where the judge got her findings, we know what the judge said, and we know more than we would typically know from why a jury made its credibility findings. So simply saying that, not because the judge made it as a finding, but because we know the judge believed this, and we know the testimony. So I'm really just pointing out that the judge had the benefit of hearing and seeing this testimony in a way that in the transcript we can only see it reflected as patterns of speech. But the judge clearly found her credible and clearly found that she understood the victim to say that penetration occurred. I would rely on my brief, but I would also note that this court defers to the post-conviction court acting as the fact finder. Here, that Judge Barcher was both the trial judge and the post-conviction judge. Judge Barcher found trial counsel's testimony credible for the ineffective assistance of counsel argument. In his brief, appellant repeatedly says that testimony supported various arguments, but Judge Barcher found the testimony of Mr. McCarter at the post-conviction hearing not credible, and she found the testimony of trial counsel, Ms. Conmacher, credible. So appellant cannot rely on that non-credible testimony to meet his burden under Strickland. Also, the district court recognized Ms. Conmacher had a clear trial strategy. She made decisions based on that trial strategy, and throughout trial, nothing she did was unreasonable based on the specific circumstances in this case. Those included keeping out the scales interview, having repeated meetings with Mr. McCarter where he told her, based on his previous experiences in other states, he didn't want a jury trial. He told her that very early on, and Judge Barcher credited Ms. Conmacher's testimony to that effect and did not believe Mr. McCarter's testimony that he had never met with his attorney outside of court a single time. In my brief, I also, on the second issue, the sufficiency of the evidence, I believe this court is indicating it is using the direct evidence standard of review, but I would emphasize that every element in this case was proved by the victim's testimony, and the testimony of a victim, if believed, is sufficient to support a verdict.
Is the evidence of the red in her underwear enough for the physical pain element?
I would push back that it was not just evidence of red in her underwear. In the MCRC transcript, she talks about it being blood. I believe at one other portion of her testimony, she refers to it as blood. She just repeatedly says she doesn't know where it was coming from exactly. She saw it in her underwear. She believed it was blood. And there was no evidence contradicting that. There was nothing. And the MCRC nurse testified that it was not unusual to not see an abrasion more than 24 hours later. She specifically testified that this area of the body heals quickly and that she was not surprised to not see evidence of this minor injury when she examined the victim more than a day later. So yes, the evidence was sufficient, but I think it was more than just red. I think there was testimony that it was blood. And if you listen to the MCRC, after she says that, they go into a description or a conversation about whether she had started her period. And so that's why, like, the nurse was saying, am I going to be able to see this? And she's like, well, I started my period, so I'm not sure if you're going to be able to see this, clearly believing it was blood.
The case law that you mentioned about penetration, do you have the citation in front of you?
I do, and I found it this morning, which is why I didn't provide it earlier. So the case from this court was A23-1692, which is Carranza, C-A-R-R-A-N-Z-A, and it cites to State v. Champ, which is 422 Northwest 2nd, 520.
My recollection is that Champ rejects this argument about distinguishing between outer folds and entry into the canal, correct?
Correct. And this court relied on it last September, specifically that portion of Champ.
If I understand correctly, that case law elaborates on a statutory definition of penetration?
Correct. The intrusion ever so slight comes straight from the statute. And then the court, in interpreting that statute, says we don't read anything into the statute. And if the legislature wanted to say vaginal canal, it would have said vaginal canal. It didn't. It said vaginal or genital opening, vaginal opening, which that includes all the other areas of the female genitalia.
And I suppose the word intrusion, I'm guessing it's followed by, like, the preposition into.
I just know the ever so slight language.
Yeah.
I don't have the whole
statute,
but it is in the statute.
Well, so, I mean, a scratch, if I understand the evidence correctly, a scratch on her vaginal lips, I guess. I don't know. I mean, is that necessarily in the area or in the area that's defined by statute?
Under the case law, so in Champ, the facts were that the victim testified the defendant would rub his fingers between the folds of skin over her vagina, but not insert his fingers all the way. Under that, that's almost precisely what we're talking about here. If you don't want to credit the judge's belief that when he was trying to stick his finger in, it went in or didn't go in. But here you clearly have enough that between the folds of skin causing injury to the lips, and that is specific testimony.
An injury is defined in case law. Is any harm or discomfort? What's the definition? Or is that it?
Yeah. I believe that's what it's okay.
And
just injury. So
for the information of those listening, I see that the statutory language is any intrusion, however slight, of any part of the defendant's body into the genital or anal opening. And that's the language Champ was interpreting.
Correct. And that's the specific language the district court relied on in its order. Okay. If there are no further questions, I just ask that you affirm Mr. McCarter's conviction.
I don't see any questions. Thank you for your arguments. Rebuttal argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd just like to pick up again on this conversation about whether there was sufficient evidence to support penetration. I did have a chance to pull Carranza here while I was listening to counsel's arguments. And again, just for clarity's sake, sexual penetration is defined to include any intrusion, however slight, into the genital opening. Carranza and Champ, in the case that's cited throughout, contained evidence of defendants rubbing fingers between folds of skin.
Doesn't the testimony here adequately support that?
I don't believe it does, Your Honor. The citation that counsel cited to in the trial transcript, and this is on page 47 of the trial transcript, starts at line 16. The prosecutor asked her, did the hand ever go inside of your vagina? And she testified, her answer was, I felt like a centimeter of his fingers try to.
What
can
about
be a
the,
touching on the outside.
What about the MCRC transcript where she said, felt something like in the inside?
Again, I would, just isolating that statement in the transcript, again, argue that it's insufficient. If she's feeling something like, it's not a sufficient description of penetration. And when you combine that with the way it was described in trial on her, during the trial testimony, it's insufficient evidence to support a finding of penetration beyond a reasonable doubt.
What about scratched on the lips?
And again, Judge, I think that's just an insufficient characterization to sufficiently support a finding of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. That can occur on the outside of the genitals. Doesn't necessarily mean it's inside. We don't have penetration. It's not relying, or even looking back to Carranza and Champ and the case in there, it doesn't rise to that level of it occurring inside or between folds of skin or in the opening. It can be on the outside of genitals.
Was there testimony from a nurse who did an examination? And if so, does that testimony shed any light on the location of the scratch?
My recollection is, it doesn't. The trial transcript doesn't provide any additional clarity on this issue. And regardless, I think we have to look at what her description, her testimony, her evidence was on this issue. And again, it's not as though, the terminology or the phrasing, the descriptions are sufficient in her testimony, where it's repeated descriptions of trying to do something and repeatedly asked to clarify what she felt, where she felt it, what she thought was happening, and it's repeatedly described as trying to touch, trying to try to grab my area, and then I moved his hands off of me. It's not sort of we have to take that testimony, her words is what they were. This isn't some sort of slang terminology that somehow means penetration.
So your argument is her consistent use of words such as trying to at best shows an attempted penetration, but the statute is still not satisfied because her testimony that she felt a scratch is inadequate to show an injury.
Correct.
And why is it inadequate to show an injury?
Physical injury in this case is defined as physical pain or injury. Okay. And again, her testimony on
don't
the physical...
Most reasonable people think, well, I felt a scratch indicate some physical pain. I mean, it might be minimal, but the statute doesn't use any terms that we commonly associate with varying degrees of harm, such as great bodily harm, substantial bodily harm, just injury.
Well, I think we have to look at what the evidence presented, what the testimony was. She was asked if it hurt. Was there any pain? And she said, I couldn't really feel it. So when we have that description, it's from the
trial transcript. At what page was she asked if there was pain?
My notes indicate it's page 48 of the trial transcript.
And her response was?
I couldn't really feel it. And she says because she was blacked out, that's her testimony. It's at the top of page, well, it starts at the bottom of page 47. Goes into the top of page 48, she was asked, did it hurt? She said, I couldn't really feel it because I was blacked out. So again, we have a specific question and evidence on this issue, Judge, where we have a response that doesn't indicate there was a level of pain. I see my time's up.
All right, thank you for your arguments. The matter is submitted. You'll have our decision within 90 days.
Thank you, Honor.